this week as U.S. President Joe Biden makes a high-stakes visit to the Middle East. We'll look at where other countries in the region stand on the Israel-Hamas war. Who and what can prevent it from spreading? And is Egypt under pressure to step in and step up? With a deadly conflict, a hostage situation, and what the United Nations calls a human catastrophe on its doorstep, we'll look at why Cairo has kept its border with Gaza firmly shut. Straight Talk Africa starts now.
I was deeply saddened and outraged by the explosion at the hospital in Gaza yesterday. And based on what I've seen, it appears as though it was done by the other team, not you. But there's a lot of people out there not sure. So we've got to overcome a lot of things. And it also means encouraging life-saving capacity to help the Palestinians who are innocent caught in the middle of this.
Well, that's U.S. President Joe Biden there speaking during his meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Tel Aviv. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. President Biden's arrival in the Middle East was supposed to include meetings in Jordan with key regional leaders. But even before he landed in the region, his trip was overshadowed by a deadly explosion at a hospital in Gaza. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakuswara has more.
Hundreds were killed in an explosion Tuesday at Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City. Palestinian authorities blamed an Israeli airstrike, while Israel said it was a rocket from the militant group Islamic Jihad that misfired. That group denied responsibility. The attack happened hours before President Joe Biden departed for Tel Aviv to meet Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to show U.S. commitment to Israel's security and push for humanitarian aid for Gazans following days of shuttle diplomacy by Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
It is critical that aid begin flowing into Gaza as soon as possible.
Biden was scheduled to continue to Amman, Jordan, but after the Gaza hospital attack, that part of the trip was cancelled. He will not be meeting leaders of neighboring countries, King Abdullah of Jordan and President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi of Egypt, or Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, who returned to Ramallah, where thousands of Palestinians protested the hospital attack.
Our Jordanian brothers said that we cannot have a summit with these conditions. We don't know what other President Biden is still going there or not. The only thing that would make sense if he made ceasefire immediately, and I'm coming to force the implementation of ceasefire.
Since the militant group Hamas launched its brazen incursion on October 7th, Israel has launched strikes on Gaza, in one case killing six people at a United Nations school where 4,000 Palestinians had taken refuge, the UN said. 2 million Gazans are under siege.
A total siege when you cut the basic infrastructure, when you cut access to water, when you cut electricity, if you don't allow food to be delivered. This is not in line with the international law.
Two U.S. carrier strike groups have been deployed to show support for Israel and deter other actors in the region.
This is a massive amount of force, and it affords President Biden many options to respond should Hezbollah or other proxies of Iran decide to opportunistically either attack U.S. forces or to attack Israel.
In Tel Aviv, Biden will ask Israel how it plans to minimize civilian casualties. He will push for a humanitarian corridor to allow aid into Gaza and for the release of hostages held by Hamas. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
We're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, who and what can prevent the Israel-Hamas war from spreading, and how much pressure is Egypt under to step in and step up? We'll look at why Cairo is refusing to let in millions of civilians fleeing Gaza. Our guests are standing by. We'll have all of that after the break.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth, when we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
Medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. Our focus this week is the crisis unfolding in the Middle East. There are deep-rooted fears that Israel's latest war with Hamas could bring the region closer to all-out war. Who and what can help prevent this conflict from spreading? As millions of people are trying to flee the conflict, the only viable exit from Gaza right now is here, the Rafah crossing. It's the only border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. That border, controlled by Egypt, has so far remained shut. There are concerns that the conflict could spark a new wave of permanent displacement from land where Palestinians want to build a state. So what role can neighboring countries like Egypt play in preventing a wider regional conflict? And what is at stake for the countries around the conflict area? My guests are Amir Salah. He is a non-resident scholar at the Middle East Institute. And also joining us from Washington is Hussein Abdul Hussein. He's a research fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Gentlemen, a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Of course, these are very, very serious and very dangerous times here. And Hussein, I do want to start out with you. We're seeing this sort of back and forth about who is responsible for that deadly explosion in Gaza City. How do these latest developments, this latest tragedy especially, and just in terms of the optics we're now seeing diplomatically, U.S. President Joe Biden not meeting with key neighboring leaders in Jordan, only meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, how does all of this complicate the U.S. president's visit to the region and what he could actually accomplish?
Well, first of all, we've seen an avalanche of evidence from Israel that it's not the Israeli forces that launched that attack, only thin evidence from the other side. Regardless of who's done this, I think the reason why this turned into a big fuss is because many parties on the Arab side are trying to run up the number of casualties, hoping that global opinion will change and will pressure the West, and the West will pressure Israel to stop this war. Israel, meanwhile, thinks that there's no going back. It has to decimate Hamas, the terrorist group that controls and manages Gaza. And the reason why Israel thinks so is because on October 7, Hamas changed the rules of the games of engagement of war between the two. Before then, there had been five rounds of war without incursions. On October 7, Hamas got out of Gaza, killed 1,300 Israelis, and now Israel believes that Hamas is an existential threat, and the end game is to decimate Hamas, and this is what many Arabs are trying to stop.
Amir, when we see the U.S. president in Israel, and here again we're talking about optics with Benjamin Netanyahu telling Israel that, you know, the U.S. continues to have Israel's back. And of course, Israel feels justified in going after Hamas for the attacks on its soil. But what does that say about the kind of influence that the U.S. president has in the rest of the region? When they see what they're seeing now, what do they hear and what do they see?
Actually, we know that Israel is a strategic ally for the U.S. And the U.S. is offering billions of financial aid every year for Israel. So if an international player has an influence over Israel, it will be the U.S. And that's why maybe I hope that it was an opportunity for President Biden to clarify that there is a need for a ceasefire and an end of military operations, because what is happening now, the time is not helping anyone. And I may agree partially with Mr. Hussein and disagree. I think that the time is not helping anyone, but the result of time consuming is more casualties from innocent people and the killing of thousands of civilians that should be condemned by all sides. So the imminent agenda for now is I hope that the U.S. president is to pressure Israel to suspend the military operations. And on the other hand, Arab sides such as Israel, such as Egypt, such as Qatar, such as Turkey, such as Saudis and UAE, they have influence over their partners in Palestine to ensure that there is a lasting de-escalation and a ceasefire. This is one thing. The other thing I think it should be raised as well with the Israeli leaders is to allow the passing of a lot of convoys filled with humanitarian aid that is now, or at least until yesterday, according to the Egyptian foreign secretary, that was in Arish. Arish is on the other side of Rafah crossing on the Egyptian sides. A lot of humanitarian aids are gathered in this area. They are not allowed to pass. There was a negotiation between Egypt and between the UN and between the UNRWA. However, until now, or at least until yesterday, there is no authorization or there is no agreement from the Israeli side to allow those aids to pass. So what we need is the U.S. president to use its leverage over Israel to allow the immediate passing of this aids.
And that is a good question, not just about influence, but about leverage as well. What kind of leverage does the United States have here, Hussein? And there are fears, of course, that this conflict could spread, that in Lebanon, to the north of Israel, for example, the militant group Hezbollah could open up another front in this war. Is the Middle East edging ever closer to that point of all-out war? And what kind of leverage does the United States have to make any sort of difference here?
Well, the United States has huge leverage over Israel, but I think the United States is in accordance with Israel that Hamas is now an existential threat and that it should be eliminated. And there's no going back to true ceasefires, de-escalations, which is five rounds of de-escalations in the past, and you still got 1,300 Israelis killed. And I think it's not only Washington that's in accordance with this opinion. We've seen European countries, the UK, France, Germany, and Italy issue a joint statement with Washington saying that Hamas is terrorist, that Israel has the right to take out Hamas, after which there'll be peace talks that would be more durable than just a regular ceasefire. In terms of spreading, I doubt that Hezbollah will enter this war. But if it enters this war, it will further prove the point that Israel is under existential threat. And I think that's why the United States deployed two aircraft carriers to the region and sent clear messages openly, publicly, and directly to both Hezbollah and Iran. If they enter this war, the United States will enter this war too. So what the U.S. is trying to do is to isolate what's going on in Israel and the Palestinian territories, to let Israel finish the job of decimating Hamas. And after that, everyone hopes that talks will resume and that peace would be closer to both the Palestinians, the Israelis, and the greater Arab world.
We'll come back to some of that a little later on. But Amir, I want to come here to you again. You published a piece on the website of the Council for Foreign Relations in April this year that warned, the headline read, "The worst is yet to come in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict." What were the signs and trends that you were seeing at the time? And could what is happening now have been foretold?
Yes. So it was with Carnegie. I don't think there was a prophecy in that. What I just did and is aligned with what many assumed was we're seeing that was happening. We have multiple indicators that we're telling that this will happen. We have a high poverty rate in Gaza, over than 60% of the people in Gaza living under poverty. And that's create, in terms of conflicts, that create visibility and grievances. And when people are feeling grievances and frustration, unfortunately, they are acting. And sometimes they are using violence. It's not a justification, but it's explanation of what's happening. This is on one hand. On the other hand, it was clear that the rise of extreme right-wing parts to be included in the Israeli coalition governments, including someone like Ben-Gvir or Smotrich, where there calls for the annexation of the entire Palestinian lands and the elimination of some Palestinian cities, that was a clear that it's a way for provoking more identity conflict and escalation between both sides. In addition, and that was mentioned in this essay, is some surveys made by credible institutes in Gaza and in the West Bank among the Palestinian people, showing that the Palestinian people is not having hope anymore in political process. Not only that, but even those who were part of those peaceful negotiations, those who were part of Oslo and Madrid, and after that Camp David, those we can start witnessing that. We can see that in the U.S. media. Those people are speaking about the diminishing of the two-state solution. All of those factors, when they are interplaying together, most probably they will produce violence and escalation. This is one thing. But on the other side, I want to respond to Mr. Hussein about what he thinks about the job that should be done about elimination Hamas. I'm afraid of what is happening now. It's not elimination Hamas. It's targeting civilians. Thousands or hundreds of people are being targeted, and they are paying the price for action they did not commit. This is a collective punishment. This is a revenge. This is not a clear operation with a clear goals. But what is happening, displacement of million people in one day, how is this relevant to elimination of Hamas? This is one thing. The other thing is we need also to look at the historical experiences. And I totally understand how many people are feeling grief and pain because of loss of innocent lives. And that happens in many occasions. That happened during ISIS and even happened after 9/11. But look at the history. Did the war in Afghanistan eliminate the Taliban, Mr. Hussein? Did the war in Iraq for years costed all sides, not only the Iraqi people, but also the U.S. troops, or U.S. money, the taxpayers? Did that eliminate al-Ba'ath? Did it eliminate national resistance? No. Actually, it reproduces them. It creates grievances. When you are applying a collective punishment, you are escalating the violence. You are reproducing it. You are creating more cycles. You are not eliminating it. So that's why I think we need to think about this broad slogan. We heard this slogan before, war on terrorism, but we need to think about what it has achieved, and we need to ensure that we are not repeating the historical mistakes.
Hussein, I'm going to give you a chance to respond here, because what is Israel's ultimate goal and Israel's aim? Because what we're going to see from here on forward is the piling up of bodies, mainly in Gaza, notwithstanding the fact that we have seen innocent lives taken in Israel, and we have an ongoing hostage situation as well with Israeli hostages in Gaza. But when all the bodies are piling up and all the costs have been counted, what is Israel's ultimate goal beyond, as it says, taking out Hamas?
Well, number one, regarding the war on terror, the United States managed to eliminate and decimate Al-Qaeda, including the killing of its two top leaders, Bin Laden and al-Zawahiri. The United States also managed to eliminate and decimate ISIS, even though at a huge cost to civilians in Mosul and many displaced. So going after terrorists is messy and costly, but is also required. Countries cannot live with terrorist violent militias just living in between civilians. Hamas started its massacres against Palestinians in the year 2007. It killed 450 Palestinians who belonged to the Fatah faction and the Palestinian Authority. And that's how Hamas took over the Gaza Strip in a coup. So we're not talking about a group that's really nice to Palestinians and only resistance, so to speak. This is a group that's violent. That's not a nation state. That's not a government. That's not accountable to Palestinians themselves, whether in Ramallah, the Palestinian Authority, or whether in Gaza. So after all these rounds of war, I think the Israelis used to reason that if they're not coming after us, then why not just leave them? After October 7, Hamas changed the rules of the games. And now the West and Israel understand that Hamas is like ISIS. There's no place for Hamas to live between Palestinians or between Israelis, and that Hamas should be taken out. Now, will that come at a high cost for civilians? I think that that unfortunately be true. The point here is that the U.S. and the world and the West and Israel have to do all they can to mitigate casualties among civilians. And I think the Israelis are trying to do that by asking the Gazans to move temporarily from north to south so that the Israelis can go in and start their ground invasion and take out Hamas, after which there might be talks between the two sides. But for the time being, there's no way anyone can live with this model of having a militia that's not accountable to any government. By the way, Hamas doesn't even talk to the Palestinian Authority. There has been no talks between them since 2007. So who talks to Hamas? I mean, who runs Hamas? What I know is that the closest ally to Hamas is Iran, and frankly, Iran has proven not to be very rational, at least by supporting all these militias, whether Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, the Houthis in Yemen, and a whole set of different militias in Iraq.
Amir, how popular is or has Hamas been in recently amongst the Palestinian people? Because I think sometimes there can be confusion for people outside of the region who do not watch these issues closely between Hamas and the Palestinian people, even though Hamas purports to be in defense of the Palestinian cause. Should the two be separated? How should they be separated? And is Hamas accountable? Do they feel accountable to the Palestinian people? And in what ways?
Yeah, first, concerning how Hamas is popular among the Palestinian people, I think recent surveys and numbers, according to credible institutes, are showing that neither Hamas nor the PLO has the same support they used to have. However, and this is again my differences with Mr. Hussein. Mr. Hussein speak about war, it's as like a video game, but in fact it is not that case. War in Afghanistan lasted for years. Billions of dollars was paid. And what you had at end, you had Taliban took control of Afghanistan while all the TVs were recording what was happening. You did not eliminate Taliban. And the same when you talked about al-Ba'ath. Maybe you eliminated al-Qaeda, but that was reproduced again in ISIS. What I'm saying clearly is, I think we have here two different perspectives. You are for the military confrontation, and what I'm saying is, if you want to eliminate radicalism and militant groups, you need to address the root causes of the conflict. That will solve the conflict. Otherwise, if you are trying to eliminate Hamas by displacement of millions of people, by depriving them from essential needs, water and electricity, you are creating grievances. This is the feasibility of conflict. This is how groups recruit. This is how groups, militant groups, restore legitimacy and support. In that case, you are not ending Hamas. You are creating, you can end Hamas, but there will be a lot of Hamas with different names. That's what we want. No, we want to address the root causes. And when we address the root causes through a comprehensive approach, when we have a two-state solution, that will create hopes and that will create empathy from the Palestinian people towards centrist and moderate representation. That's what we need to think about. It's not like short-termism, like we can't do that. This is not that easy. It's not a game. It's thousands of lives. Innocent people are paying the price for something they did not commit.
Gentlemen, I want to move on here quickly to the case of Egypt. Hussein, of course, as you know, Egypt is a member of the African Union. Africa is, of course, our beat here on the show. But this is a country that straddles both Africa and the Middle East. And we've talked about the border, which in reality is sort of the only escape valve, really, that many Palestinians or people fleeing Gaza right now have. Egypt has kept that border shut for the most part, with a few exceptions. But it's certainly not allowing an influx of people fleeing Gaza into its country. Can you walk us through some of the reasons why Egypt might be keeping that border firmly shut?
Well, I can see clear reasons other than populism and not wanting to go against the prevailing mood on the Arab street. To my mind, when this happened in different countries, for example, when the 2006 war between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon happened, 2 million Lebanese left South Lebanon, went to Mount Lebanon, they went to Syria and Jordan, and when the war ended, they came back. And the same thing happened when the U.S. took out ISIS in Mosul. There was displacement, and then after the war ended, everyone started coming back. So in this case, no one is talking about transfer or permanent displacement. Everyone is saying, let them just move out for the duration of the military operation, after which there'll be peace talks like Mr. Amr wants. And this is the basic premise that President Biden built the whole idea of supporting the war for the elimination of Hamas. Now, if Egypt wants to play a constructive role, if other Arab governments want to play a constructive role, they can convince Hamas to politically concede power to the Palestinian Authority, not to Israel. They can, I think Qatar tried to prevail on Hamas in the year 2017 to amend their charter, because the Hamas charter says no talks, no peace, no recognition of Israel. We want the whole land from the river to the sea. And this is against the Arab consensus for peace with Israel. This is against every Security Council resolution that we know of. So what we're trying to say is that either Hamas has to leave or has to be integrated into the Palestinian Authority for peace talks to resume. But we cannot have a violent organization that opposes peace altogether, that says we will liberate the whole land and construct an Islamic state. So Egypt can really help. It has leverage. Jordan might be able to help. Just convince Hamas, you can't keep on doing this. You can't go out, kill 300,000 Israelis, come back and expect de-escalation and no peace talks.
Amir, what is your take? Because on the one hand, I'm sure Egypt does not want an influx of potentially Hamas fighters as well coming into its border. But at the same time, there's this pressure growing of people, the humanitarian aspect as well. What does Egypt have to grapple with here? We've got about 2 minutes.
Yeah, actually, it was clarified by the Egyptian foreign secretary that from a couple of days and even yesterday that the Egyptian crossing, the crossing of Rafah is open from the Egyptian side. What happened over the recent couple of days is the crossing was targeted by the IDF four times. And that's what created crisis on the Gaza side. And that's what halted the passing of tons of humanitarian aid. So from the Egyptian side, Egypt wants to allow the entrance of humanitarian aid now. And if the U.S. can ensure that, and if the Israel can give consensus to the U.N., we will do that immediately.
But that's aid, not people.
Yes. But on the other hand, we cannot ignore that, according to the Egyptian perception, there is a fear that from historical experiences, from what happened in Jordan, the influx of many Palestinian refugees, from what happened in Lebanon, many millions of people has left their homelands and they don't have the right to return. So for Egypt, what it's clear about now is try to avoid having a humanitarian crisis. Egypt is also have millions of refugees from other crises. Recently, Egypt hosted hundreds of thousands from Sudanese running away from a civil war. So what is Egypt is trying to do now and what is urging everyone to do is allowing the humanitarian aid to pass to avoid a humanitarian crisis. That's one. The second is stop an escalation. And that's what Egypt, through its leverage, through its partnership with reapproachment with Qatar and with Turkey, is trying to ensure that there is no re-escalation from the Palestinian side.
And as we've seen in many examples on the African continent, leaving your home is one thing and getting people to return and resume their lives as normal is quite another. Gentlemen, I do thank you both for your insights. I thank you for your time. Amir Salah and Hussein Abdul Hussein, thank you both. That is our show this week. Thank you so much for watching and thank you for always listening. Do follow us on social media. Let us know what you think. From all of us here in Washington, until the next time, from me, it's goodbye.